What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Deer Vein Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Heller, and today we got Brooks Chandler on. And Brooks has a lot of experience killing bucks in the rut, and he's done it the last 2 years. So wanted to have him on to chat with him about that. He's a recommendation from another friend that I had on earlier this year. So talking to him about the rut, and that's what we're going to be going through in this podcast. Should air around November, like 3rd or 4th, something like that. So it'll be good timing. Before we hop into the podcast and go over strategies and thoughts and all that kind of stuff with rut, just real quick, it would be the partners of the show. So I want to just give a quick shout out to Origin and Jocko Fuel. Origin is 100% made in America clothing. Jocko Fuel is supplements, so protein, pre-workouts, energy drinks, creatine, all that kind of fun stuff if you're in the working out or I want to just get a little bit healthier, get some healthier calories in. That'd be Jocko Fuel. And again, Origin is jeans, hoodies, camo, boots, belts, wallets, all 100% American made and with 100% American materials as well. That's the big thing there. And then Heller 10 will get you 10% off of all that stuff. Next up would be Elite Archery. Yeah, I don't expect anybody to be swapping bows right now in the middle of the rut, but after season's over, if you have some issues or something like that and you want to look at new bows, give Elite a shot. They have the shootability challenge. I have the Carbon Era right now. It's an $1,800 bow, which is fairly expensive. Like, I don't expect anybody to go out there and run that thing, but at the same time, it's a phenomenal bow. I really enjoy it, and the Omnia, and they just came out with their new ones. So go check those out at your local dealers. If you're wanting to get into a new bow setup and all that jazz. Last but not least, Onyx Maps, which, Brooks, do you run Onyx?
Oh, God. I wouldn't be able to do it without it.
All right, so Onyx Maps. I talk about this every week, but if you guys are not on Onyx Maps, you're missing out. These guys, like, you get your waypoints, you get GPS, you get public-private land boundaries, you get topography, you get satellite, you get a hybrid. You get wind direction, you get notes, you get your camera pictures. Like, there's all sorts of information that you can add into Onyx. And for me, like, I got an Illinois hunt coming up in a weekish. And I am doing all my e-scouting on Onyx, marking points of interest, and then basically going to be running through a lot of those in day one to see what's hot, what's not, and then making my decision based on where I want to set up and all that stuff after that. So go check out Onyx. They have the 7-day free trial, and that'll get you guys started. If you want to continue, go ahead and continue with one state or multiple states or whatever. All right. So with that, let's get into it. So Onyx, basically running off that, Brooks, actually, why don't you introduce yourself and where you don't have to tell exactly where you're from, but just like,
yeah,
where you're at and things like that.
Sure. So name's Brooks Chandler. Live in southwestern Wisconsin. Hunt some of the bordering states to Illinois. So just to give you an idea, that's kind of the area that I hunt, and then also quite a ways north of that. I'm 25 years old. Been bow hunting since I was 10. So I got 15 years under my belt right now, and it's by far my biggest passion in life. Like, I couldn't imagine living my life without having bow hunting, you know?
Yeah. And a new baby son.
Yeah, he's going to be 2 in December. Yeah. So that's been a balancing act, but it's helped me become more efficient with my time, which is beneficial, you know? So,
yeah. Nah, good for you, dude. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, so they're a little bit later. And I'm 33, so I had my first kid when I was 29. But man, like, it's fun. It's exciting. It's a time consumer. Like, they definitely eat time, but at the same time, it's totally worth it. And then, yeah, exactly, dude. I totally agree. It teaches you to be very efficient with your time. So cool, man. Well, as far as just hopping into, you know, the rut, you're in your rutcation right now, right?
Yep. Right in the middle of it.
Awesome. Yeah. So how long have you been hunting? What's going on? What are you seeing? Talk to me about it.
So, been hunting pretty much the whole season, on and off. Obviously, earlier in the season, I really hunt, like, you know, try to hunt high odds opportunities, you know, with good conditions, at least having an idea of going in and killing something rather than just going out to sit. So right now I'm, you know, I'm in the middle of bouncing around a bunch of different spots, because my hit list is not, what it usually is this year. Really having to dig deep, to find a buck that's pushing that 160 inch mark. So I think I'm getting there step by step, just getting to where my next hunt, I'm going to be really confident in it, you know? But it's not easy getting on a mature buck, especially hunting public and permission pieces. It's not easy, man. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
Yeah, man. 100. I mean, pushing 160 inches. That's a lofty goal. Good for you, man.
Yeah. I mean, so another thing, like, as like the season, as it gets closer to gun season, I have some really mature bucks on camera that are not the highest scoring deer that I think I could get on relatively easily. So probably like by this weekend, if I don't have like a slob somewhat narrowed down or an idea where he is, I'll start hunting some of those more mature, lower scoring bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's about the time where all of them disappear too.
It's true.
Right. No, I'm just playing, messing around. So like, are you on a whole bunch of different, I mean, you said public and permission pieces, like, are you running cameras on like 10 different pieces, trying to figure out where that is, where that big buck is?
Yeah. So I hunt, I don't even know how many properties I got permission on. It's probably close to 10. Okay. The biggest one is 225 acres, and then the smallest one is 5 acres. And I have a lot of those properties that are between like 5 and 30 acres. Just seems like you got good odds of getting permission on some of the smaller overlooked pieces, you know?
Yeah.
So I run a ton of cameras. I do a lot of boots on the ground scouting. I'm fairly aggressive with my approach. Just because I have so many options, I kind of can be, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, I feel, super beneficial. If you want to shoot mature deer, you got to have options. You just never know, you know, where the big one might be for that particular time.
Yeah, that's one thing. I forgot who I was talking to, but one of the guys I was talking to previously, and this was like years ago, he's like, man, if you want to kill big deer, you can never be married to a piece of property. You have to have a lot of different properties, and you got to have cameras, and you got to have boots on the ground on all of them, and you got to understand all of them. And like, maybe one year I'll be hunting property A, and I won't spend a minute at property D or E. And then next year I spend all my time at E, because that's where the booner is this year. Right. He's like, it doesn't matter. You just got to move around. You got to scout, you got to find that stuff. So then, you said you're kind of bouncing all over the place. Like, what is your, like, if you don't have a buck narrowed down or anything, and the rut's about to get really going, if it's not already going in certain areas, you know, how are you trying to narrow that down? Are you doing like observation sits? Are you sitting like funnels, or what are you trying to do there?
It's a mixture of both. This time of year, I'm not doing an observation sit. Like, this time of year is kind of, you know, it's where rubber meets the road, so they say. And a lot of my observation sits are already done at this point. So I'm kind of sitting to some funnels. It's just areas where I believe the best chance of a buck is going to be there in relation to, like, you know, monitoring doe activity, monitoring your area food sources, you know, obviously checking your trail cameras, seeing what's on there. All that kind of, you know, piles together. And then if I throw a sit at a piece, and let's say it's like a smaller parcel, so I've been doing a lot recently, just bouncing from smaller parcel, just kind of stacking the deck in my favor, you know. Like, on a spot, don't have good luck, don't see any sign, not a lot of movement, I'll bounce to another property. Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so, like, what do those high odd spots look like? Like, if you're thinking about maybe one you sat today or yesterday, what does something like that look like in this time frame?
So I sat tonight, and I sat over it's a field that's cover cropped, so it was corn silage, and they chopped the field, and so they drilled oats, turnips, and radishes into it. So it's like 150 acre food plot, pretty much. It's not quite that big. So the reason why I decided to hunt it is because I have a trail camera over a primary scrape on this cover crop field, and I just get so much doe activity. Like, it's all daylight hours. I mean, there's at least three groups of does that are working through that area. So I'm just, thinking it's in a really good area, like for just good genetics. There's some good bucks in the area. And just sat in a spot where I can see a lot. Just see what comes out and see if I can't get my eye on something.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. And so, like, then at that point, it's chase, like, tonight was chasing the does, right? If you can't find the bucks, find the does.
Correct. Yep. And I saw a handful of bucks. I saw like five or six bucks tonight. One really solid 3-year-old that he did just that. I mean, he saw, or like, I knew where the does were coming out just based on the cell camera pictures I had. And the buck actually circled the downwind side of the field in the woods until he smelled the does, and then he popped out and then started harassing those does. And he came right into like 30 yards away.
Gotcha. Dang. That's cool. That's like, that's where I like, I would usually send an arrow.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome, dude. That's cool. And it all, like, and it's funny because at that, I say that somewhat sarcastically, because, you know, it's all about what you're after and what's capable in your area. Right. If you have never seen a 130-inch 3-year-old in your neck of the woods, like, that's probably something you're going to shoot. But if you've seen a lot of them and you have 6-year-olds, 5.5-year-olds that are 170 inches running around, like, probably going to hold out a little bit. It's all relative to where you're at. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. And I mean, just like I said earlier, like, my standards are probably going to go down here relatively quickly. I do got one hammer that I'm actually going to hunt tomorrow morning. But it's on a very small piece of property. So, like, I do not have real high odds. My next two sits are going to be my highest odds to get on that buck. And then I'm going to start hunting some of those more mature, like, 5-6-year-old. They're like 130, 140-inch deer, you know?
Right.
Still just sweet, really sweet bucks. Like, I love mature deer. If I have the option, I'm going to hunt a higher scoring mature deer. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And that's where a lot of, like, and though I say that sarcastically, is like, a lot of people would be like, what are you doing letting a really nice 3.5-year-old walk by? Like, we never even see him. Right. So with hunting those, that field and chasing the does, are you sitting like an inside edge there and just kind of keeping an eye on that? And then if they come out, what about like some of the more pressure pieces where you feel like they don't come out into the fields?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do this a lot, and I tell a lot of my buddies this, or just, you know, friends of mine, like, just put yourself in the buck's shoes. Like, just literally act like you're a buck. Like, walk onto your property, take a look at your property, and just say, all right, if I'm a buck, and like right now, this time of year, he's looking for does and still probably monitoring some human pressure too, because there's a lot of pressure in the woods right now. So just think about how a buck can move the most efficiently in a property to monitor pressure and monitor does. And once you kind of start like thinking about it, and you're like, oh, if this buck wants to check this entire valley, he's going to circle on the downwind side right here, but he's not going to want to go on the cow pasture. He's going to be in between that fence and the really thick stuff just so he can smell everything in that valley. And then either he's going to go to a doe, or if there's a hunter in there, he's going to get the hell out of there. Does right. that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. No, yeah. So then, and so then in those scenarios, you're wanting to, basically like set up on the downwind side of everything.
Yeah, I play my wind relatively aggressively. Some people think I play it too aggressively. So, like, if I have the buck is working, I think he's going to work on an inside corner, I'll literally have my wind so it's just blowing just off of that inside corner. It's like most of the mature deer I shoot them right before they get my wind or they just missed my wind. And, you know, before they come into bull range.
Gotcha. Do you use any like scent killer or anything like that or no?
No. I just play the wind. I feel like sometimes people can do that, use that as a crutch, you know, like I'm not against like scent control and stuff like that, but I've also seen like, especially if you're hunting mobile, you can really get creative with where you're sitting and like what your access is and everything. It's where like you can have a really good idea of how to play your wind for a particular spot. Like, and if you just learn how to essentially disappear in the woods, that's what I like to say. Like, that's some of the best scent control you can possibly have, right?
Yeah. So yeah, how would you learn to do that? Like, what's gonna help you disappear? You know, and why is being mobile so important with that?
Yeah, definitely experience. Like, because I have a lot of properties that I have like repeat years history on now. So like every time I go in and like I have a tree picked, like I always bring milkweed with me, you know, always dropping milkweed and like just thinking about the correlating wind direction, how much foliage is on the trees, just seeing like where that milkweed is kind of going, see where the deer movement is coming from. And then in real time, just make up your mind for the next sit. Like, yeah, you know, if I drop this milkweed right here, it's a evening hunt. It seems to be sucking down in this ditch behind me. But if I get just off of the ditch, just on the other side of it, and I'm dropping it, it's dropping back in a, you know, a plowed field or something like that.
Yeah. So then, yeah, it's getting in there and then I have to imagine like you're trying to understand that wind, where everything's going. And then you're noting like, okay, this area can be hunted here. Like, what if you get in there and the wind is totally not doing what you're thinking it was going to do?
Yeah. So
like, do you bail or do you like try to reposition or?
You know, I'm not the greatest at that. Cause like there's times where I do bail. Like if I'm hunting, if I know for a fact there's a mature deer in a certain direction and I'm walking in, I'm dropping milkweed and it's going there. Like I'm hanging my sticks. I always drop milkweed when I'm going up the tree too. If I feel it like hit my neck and it's like going that direction, I'll get the hell down and I'll just get out of there and wait for that wind to switch just a little bit more. Like it could be a straight south, you know, and like the south is just not quite there, but on a south southeast, it could be just enough to get your wind in the right place to where you got to crack.
Yeah. What about spots where the wind might shift while you're in there? So like I was in a spot the other day where when I got in there and the wind was, I got in there before light and the wind was going east and it's supposed to be going northwest.
Yep.
Right. So I got in there. I was like, ah, that's not good. Yep. So I moved around a little bit and kind of got a better position. And as the day picked up, it became northwest, which
northwest.
Is what I was looking for.
Yeah. And that's right? that's the thermal shift, right?
Yeah.
So one thing that I've been doing a lot more of, especially these last 2 years, is kind of going in at gray light. Mm. Like especially if it's not close to a food source, like if it's more of a bedding location. I like going into gray light for that exact reason. Because sometimes like in hill country, like I hunt some hills around here, your thermal pull is so strong. But like if you go in, you might sound like it's crazy, but try it sometime. I don't know. But if you go in gray light, your thermals are going to be a little bit closer aligned to what they're going to be, like, you know, when the sun starts to rise.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that a lot if the spot warrants it. If it's a spot where I think I'm going to shoot one right away in the morning, like big buck I shot last year, I shot him the first 5 minutes of daylight. And I went in there right away because I knew it was going to be I was going to shoot him right away in the morning because I was shooting him before he crossed the road to go on the neighbors.
Gotcha. Was that off like a food source then, or was it just?
It was like... just off of a freshly cut cornfield. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And yeah, there's plenty of spots that we hunt like that in. And, you know, I would say, I feel like people think they need to get in there. Every sit has, you have to be in there an hour before light or 30 minutes before light. Like, got to get in there, got to get set up. And there's plenty of sits where I've been where I don't get out there until like gray light. And some of it's like, you know, you'd be like, ah, oh, you're just being lazy as shit. And you're using that as an excuse, right? To get out there at gray light. But then the other part of it is like, there's, especially during the rut, like if you're like blowing out stuff behind you, you know, like you're going through stuff to get to stuff.
Yep.
Sometimes you want to hunt that in, almost like you're elk hunting. Like you want to be able to creep through that, make sure you're not like really pushing a whole lot of anything. Or if you do bump something, it's just like a doe, or you're working through it and you don't know if a buck could come trotting through that stuff. Right. So you're like, all right, well, I'm going to go in there because I got to push through this and I might as well like still hunt this while I go through it. And I'll be like, let's say it gets gray lights like 7 a.m. and it's sun rises at 7:30. Like you're going to be getting to your spot about like 7:45 or 8 where you're going to camp out for a few hours. Right. Cause it's maybe it's further back. Maybe it's like later movement. And I've begun to think that there are certain like good days that have good cloud cover where it's like thickly overcast. I feel just like deer move. That's like if sun rises at 7, like that's an 8 to 9 a.m. movement cycle. Like
every time.
Is it, do you okay? You agree to that?
I totally agree.
Okay.
Totally agree.
Yeah, I just feel like whereas if you have a, you know, ass crack it on, the sun pops up, it's nice, beautiful day, like that's early right away movement. So yeah, like have you had do you have experiences like that a lot where you think like it's that later morning movement?
Yeah, I mean, once again, it depends on the spot. Like it depends on how close you are to like a food source, or like honestly, that's the most important thing. Like how close you are to a food source you think the deer might be. Like if you are close to it, you should probably be in, you know, 15, 20 minutes before daylight at the latest. But if you got a little bit more space, like in, you know, just a little bit of a transition to get to that bedding area, or you're hunting a transition, I just like going in just when it's kind of getting close to gray light, you know. And also like I'm hunting, you know, public and private pieces, so it's not like I got manicured trails.
Gotcha.
Getting mowed to all my spots, so I need to be very careful about what I'm doing with my ground scent when I'm walking in. And like, if you're going through with just a headlamp on, yeah, you can like see some brush and stuff, but like you really don't want stuff brushing up against you. Like that's just like you sitting there in that spot. I think like if a deer gets downwind of that spot where you brushed up on some like native grass or whatever it is, it's no bueno. No bueno at all.
No bueno. Not good. I will attest to this. Both of the deer I killed this year came in on a trail that I walked in on or where I had ground scent on previously.
Sure.
So it's not that I wanted either of them. I did not want that to happen with either of them. It's just how it came about.
Was it a mode trail?
One of them was. Yep. One
not
of them,
the public, though.
Not public. Yep. One of them was a mode four-wheel trail. And then the other one was the one I killed the other day. I got in and I ended up seeing him trying to put a stalk on him at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, blew it, and then walked out of there. And when I walked out of that area, I kind of like scouted my way out. And then I came back to it 2 hours later and I killed him 3 hours later. So it was just, but also he was on a hot doe. So I don't think anything really cared.
Throw everything out the window then.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But I feel like you never want to do that. Like, don't do that. No bueno. Like it's not the way you want to go. But if you do, it's not the end of the world. Like you can still kill, right? So like, cause I used to, if I, even as little as 2 years ago, if I like walked across a deer trail or I walked in on a deer trail, I'd be like, all right, that's off limits. Like you can't even hunt it. Like, don't even bother hunting it. You got to go somewhere else. Like if I'm out scouting a new piece and I end up like bopping around and then I end up like, okay, well, this is the best sign I found, but I already like left all my scent in here. Like I would usually just leave and be like, all right, well, that's going to be good in a day or two. Whereas now I would sit it, because if you're just, in my opinion, like if you pass through really fast, it can matter, but it's not the end of the world, is I guess what I'm saying. Cause I also have had, like, last year I had a fawn smell me in tall grass. Like I had her at 12 yards and she sniffed right where I walked in on and just blew out. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's no good.
Right.
That was a fawn too. That wasn't anything mature. So, yeah, just one of those interesting pieces.
Yeah. And you know, you made a good point, because like one thing you got to account for, like this time of year, you can get away with a lot more this time of year than you can in October, like especially the first 20 days of October. This time of year, you can, they're more tolerable to more. There's, the woods is just chaos right now. There's a lot going on. So they just put up a little bit more, in my opinion.
Yeah. So then, like, what are you, so you're bouncing around from piece to piece, you're trying to stay mobile, trying to get your wind right and everything. What are you running for, like a setup, like your mobile setup?
Like, are you doing? I run a Lone Wolf Custom Gear double steps.
Okay.
And then I run a, just a tethered mantis saddle with a Predator platform.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Gotcha. So running the saddle game, which is good.
Yeah. Like, yeah. One quick plug. I just want to make, or just recommendation. So I only use two sticks. Like I use two sticks, and they have an aider, like a steel cable aider on them.
Yeah.
But I really like to use the Cranford screw-in steps. Like they're very high quality foldable tree steps. And so like tonight I didn't have to use a single stick. I just used two screw-in steps because there's like branches that were just placed correctly. And like the less sticks you can use, the more efficient you're going to be every time. Just less to pack up, less to put up. You know, it's just like I use those Cranford steps on private 100% of the time when I'm hunting mobile.
Gotcha. I'll look at, I'm looking at them right now on Amazon.
So you can keep four, like I have four, and I hockey tape them. So like they're completely silent. And you can keep them in your pockets and they're relatively light. And then if you look at a tree and you see there's a couple of good placed branches that aren't dead, you know, put one stick here and then you just need two screw-in steps. Next thing you know, you're 18 feet.
Right. And you're strapped in with your platform and everything. Yeah.
Strapped in all the time.
I agree. Yeah. The ideal scenario is not having to use like anything, right?
Yeah.
Besides the saddle, like pop in, get up there and then, cause I have done, there's one tree that I've found on a piece of public where literally you get to like 18, 20 feet and it branches into three, like the trunk breaks into three main trunks at that point. And there's like this little like tree nest. I don't know what you want to call it, but you can just stand on that. You can strap in and you don't have to use a stick or anything. You just go in there with a saddle and you're set, you know? But yeah, dude, I definitely agree with the less stuff to set up, less stuff to mess with. Like, that's always nice to just like boop, boop, boop out of the tree.
Yes, especially like this time of the year, it wears on you. Like, because I hunt mobile every time. Like, so every time I'm going in, I'm hanging a new set, ripping it down, unless I'm going to hunt it again in the morning. So it wears on you. So just the little things you can do just to improve it, it just makes you grind that much harder the rest of the year, you know?
It 100% does. It does wear on you. So then like when you're going out to your, are you hunting a lot of the same trees that you've scouted like previously? You get there and you're like, because how, when you're looking at a property, I guess, how are you scouting it? Like a 30 acre piece versus the 200 acre piece, like, and especially like combating other hunters that are also out there too.
Yeah.
You know, how are you going about, like, do you just have preset spots where you really like, or are you doing some fresh scouting? How are you going about all that?
Yeah, so I do a lot of spring scouting. I mean, every year I'm going in and I'll actually take those little tacks, like the reflector tacks, because I always have in my bino harness. And so like if I'm scouting and like I'm getting really intimate with a particular spot, I'll throw a couple of tacks on that tree.
Sure.
But also, like, I got permission on a handful of brand new properties this year. And so all I did was I just waited until we had a really good rainstorm. And as soon as we had like a solid 3 days of rain here in October, I just went through and I walked through every single square inch of it, trimmed out some trees. I took some old sticks with me, you know, just kind of preparing myself for this time of year. So I have a lot of options, but I'll still hunt new trees. You know, like tomorrow morning, I'm gonna hunt the brand new tree. It's not like it's going to be a tangled mess. I know exactly what I'm getting into, but yeah, that's kind of it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Are you, so, what was my question there? The brand new tree, have you scouted it before or are you going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So, let's say Wednesday. So Sunday night, this is that really big one. I don't have any pictures of him or anything. I literally just glassed him for the first time Sunday. He actually got to about 70 yards away or so. And he has this little pocket that's like down in the bottom of this valley where like you could tell he keeps a doe down there. Like he had a doe down there on Sunday. And like it's the doe literally can't get away from him unless it comes through him. Cause it's so thick on this backside. There's like fallen trees and everything, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, and there's, oh my God, like just glassing it, just ripped up. Like, and it's like not just really fresh sign. It's like sign from like the last week to 10 days. Like he is, okay. I think he's preparing for it. Cause that's where he goes and breeds. Maybe not every doe, but I mean, man, I bet you he takes a couple of does in there in a year. It's cause there's so many deer around there.
Huh?
Like, so like this tree that I'm sitting in the morning, I glassed it from a pre-prepped spot. I already prepped this tree. And when I was up there, I saw them and I, you know, watched them do their thing and I was glassing and I'm like, oh man, there's a little knob right there that's above it. And if I have a south to a southeast wind, I'm gonna be able to sit right on this walnut tree and he's screwed if he does a thing tomorrow.
Yeah. Dang. Okay. So you got a pretty good idea. You've already looked at the tree. You know where you're going. You've probably marked it on Onyx and you're going to go in there. Is this go in there in the dark or are you going in gray light?
I'm going to be going in a gray light because it's the closest feeding area is probably 400 or 500 yards away. And I got to go through some shit to get here. Like I'll be picking burdocks off me all morning. To get to the spot, but my wind is going to be blowing directly back to where I'm walking in. Like that's really important thing too. Like I always try to cut my wind over top of my entry trail when possible.
Yeah.
So, and like I was saying earlier, this time of year too, I think you can get away with a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've never heard of, this is the first time I'm ever hearing of like, what I want to say, like, a buck corral, like he's like corralling these does into these like this pocket where he's going to be breeding them. Have you seen that before? Do you think this is like his home or like have you seen it before where a buck will stay like within a bigger chunk and just keep bringing different does in and out?
Yeah, and if he died, like that buck was to die, I really think another buck would do the same thing.
Okay.
Because I shot a buck in 2021 every single year, like right around the last week of October, there's always a doe that comes into heat in that particular area. And this spot, there's like a river and then there's a really steep bluff on the other side. So like it really is a funnel or like a, like you said, it's just like a corral. And the doe can't get out of there unless like goes essentially only one direction. And so that's exactly what this buck is doing. He had this doe pinned back there and I got just close enough to him to where, you know, the doe got up and he just bumped her a little bit, right down a scrape line, you know, and I shot him at less than 10 yards.
Dang. Okay. No, that's awesome. That's cool. So, and you're thinking that this buck will be doing the same thing and even through the rut, you think he's going to a lot of times, or do you think like, you know, we're recording this on November 1st, you think in a week he's going to bail out of there and go hunting, or do you think he's going to stick around?
Well, he could. I mean, they're wild animals, but like at this point, I'm kind of like forming a thesis or a hypothesis in my head, right? So like tomorrow morning, I'm just going to put it in action. So he'll probably do something else, you know? But like right now, I think that's my best chance to put myself in the best position. And he definitely is corralling that doe there. Like there's no going around it. So if he's not there, it's in a good area. So maybe another one will show up.
Yeah. Is this like an all day sit spot for you?
It could be. I really don't ever like make my mind up at the time. If I'm still seeing deer and I'm having a good sit, you know, come 11 o'clock, yeah, I'll stick it out. But I don't ever really make my mind up, you know, on a lot of things. Like I just let myself kind of naturally or organically come up with my next step or next decision.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. And that's something that I've started doing a little bit more, to be honest, is like, you're sitting there and you're like, all right, where am I going to go tomorrow morning? And it's like, I don't know. I'll figure. Sometimes you're thinking about it. You're like, all right, well, I'm going to go try this spot, or I'm going to go try this spot, or maybe I'll let my cameras tell me where to go or whatever. But then like you wake up and you get going and you're like, you know what? Like, I'm not feeling that spot. I'm feeling this one. I'm going to head over there. Like,
exactly.
I couldn't tell you how many times I got analysis paralysis where I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I have no idea. Like, do I do this? Do I do this? What about this? What about that? And then all of a sudden you're like, you know, running 20 minutes later, you're going to a spot and you're taking 5 steps out of your truck and going, no, I got to go to the other one.
Hey, it happens though. And like, that's totally okay. Like I feel, you know, and I know you don't do this, but I have some friends that like, they're like, don't know where to go. You know, I'm like, just go hunt, like just go and just enjoy it and just see if you can't pick up something that you learn. And then maybe just try to get better for the next one. Like that's all you can do, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And if you don't know, go scout.
Yeah.
Go take a look around, like go bop around. And even if it is like, you know, a private piece, like go sit for the first couple hours, go sit somewhere and just sit on the ground, try to be quiet and hang out, and then see what you see, and then go scout after that. Right. And go find some confidence. Right. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. That's probably the best. Yeah. The best piece of advice there. Cause I have a couple friends who right now who are, they've been hunting since October 25th. It's, you know, they're about 7 days into this thing, six, seven days in. And they're like, man, I ain't seeing shit. Everyone else is killing everything. You're looking at Instagram and you're like, dude, everyone's killing. I'm not. Why am I not seeing deer, you know? And it's just like, dude, to be honest, there's, you know, in Wisconsin, I think there's 600, there's like 300,000 or 400,000 bow hunters. And there's like 600,000-ish gun hunters, that gun hunter licenses. I think maybe it's like 300,000 bow hunters. There ain't 300,000 dead deer on Facebook. Right? Not right. Not from Wisconsin. There's
exactly
far fewer. There's probably, I think the number like antler deer, I should have these stats in front of me because I saved them last year, but the numbers are staggeringly low. Like in terms of like mature deer shot, it's like, you know, if you shoot a buck that's over 3 years old, you're in the top 10% of bow hunters in Wisconsin. Right. So it's just like one of those things that's difficult to get perspective on, because there's just like, all you see are the big ones on Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. But you just got to go. Yeah, man. So if I were a friend of yours and I was like, man, I don't know where to go. Like, how would you describe an area? Like, what would you want to look for? What would you want to get going? A buck corral?
Once you find them, like a buck corral, like you'll know what it is. I know a couple of my friends, we all believe it's true. I mean, believe it when you see it, you know. But like, if you were one of my buddies, like that reached out to me right now, it's like, hey man, like I'm in a rut. Like, what should I do? I'm like, well, I'll just go to the deer. Just figure out where the deer are, like where you're seeing the most doe activity. Like if you're driving around, like just looking for deer, see some good trails, you know, cutting across the road or something like that. Just go to the deer and just see what happens. Cause that's the magical thing about this time of year. You get yourself on does, get yourself on deer, you know, things probably look pretty good for you.
Yeah. And that's just finding, and then to find the deer, find the does, find the sign, find activity, find food, find something that's like getting you. Cause there's, I'm sure there's people out there who aren't even seeing a deer and they're like, dude, what's going on? Like, I'm not seeing Jack Diddley.
If I'm in Wisconsin and that's happening to me, you know, the first thing I'm doing is I'm getting my truck as soon as it gets dark out and I'm going shining every time. Like, shining is such an effective tool that people don't understand how effective it is.
That's very true. That's, yeah. In Wisconsin, as long as you don't have a weapon in the car, you can shine. Right? Up until, like, I think it's 10 p.m. I think it is.
Yeah, 10 p.m. cut off. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I do, man. I think that's actually a great tip. And I know, like, I've put that into use in prior years. Just with buddies, like we, you know, 3-4 of us will go hunt a property and we won't see anything. And they're like, where are these deer? And we'll go bop around at night and we'll shine and we'll find deer on the property that we're hunting. Maybe they're coming from across the street, you know, maybe they're coming from some other spot, or, you know, maybe they're over on the neighbors tonight, but at least we butt up against them. So we know, like, hey, someone needs to sit over there, you know, in the morning. It'll give you idea and find that confidence to go sit somewhere. Right.
Yeah. I mean, people get so worked up about trail cameras, like getting trail camera pictures and stuff, right? Literally shining a deer and seeing it is the same exact thing as a trail camera picture. Same exact thing, except you get to see the deer and observe it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Very effective tool. Like, if I had to pick between cameras and shining, I'm picking shining every day of the week.
Yeah. That's you bring up a great point. Like, I would strongly agree with that. So then, are you, I guess, back to that big buck who's in the buck corral? So you glassed him up at 70 yards. And this is just a question I forgot to ask. Glassed him up at 70 yards. He's down in there with the doe. Was he in there for like hours, or was it like minutes, or what was that like?
No, he was there from, I think that they were bedding in there. It just took another mature buck. Like, it was a four-year-old, I think. He's not a very high-scoring deer. Came through the valley. Did the thing that I was telling you about. Like, this buck was working very efficiently to smell, like, scent check the valley. And he scent checked that doe and the buck, I'm assuming. And so he beelined it right for this little area where there's a bunch of downfall. And as soon as he got like 50 yards away, I heard a really soft grunt. And all of a sudden I look over, I'm like just trying to see, I'm like, oh yeah, there's a deer standing right there. And threw up my binos and he got up and he's just all stiff-legged, you know? It's like his hair stood up. And then this other mature buck is just like, F this, not screwing around with that. And just came right back to where he came from.
Oh, really? So he just stood up and walked away.
Yeah, didn't even screw with him.
Just like, oh man, John over there, John's a beast. I ain't interested in fighting that.
He's so true. So true.
It's like pure intimidation. Yeah, you want to come in here, buddy? I'm gonna kick you.
Good luck.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's super interesting. So then, did any other bucks come through that valley that night?
Yeah, there was a handful of there. The rest of them were like 1 or 2 year olds. Then they all did the same thing. Like, they hit the same exact spot that the first buck that winded the bedded deer, same exact spot. And then they beelined it, same exact trail. I don't know if they were smelling the first buck that did it, or if they like, that's just where the vortex was coming through. And like, that's where they really got those deer. That's where they got their wind.
Yeah.
They all went right to him and did the same thing. Just stood up and was like, dare me. Like, just try me.
Right.
And this doe was just so tired that she wasn't going to get up.
Yeah. She was just, oh man. So then, do you film any of your hunts? Like, do you have a camera with you at all?
So I take the Lowell Custom Gear, that pocket arm.
Yeah.
And I have a Rode mic for my phone. So I just, I mean, I have a, I don't know what it is, the newest iPhone. And it has the
titanium.
Yeah, the titanium one. It is actually.
Yeah. No, I'm just laughing because I always thought that was so interesting that like the iPhone comes out and their marketing material isn't like better camera or better reception or better battery life or better anything. It's the titanium.
I know.
Okay,
company money though. So
newest iPhone with a Rode mic, and that's what you got that on your pocket arm.
Yep.
Nice.
And I also use a GoPro, but I'll never let the filming or like not filming interrupt a hunt. Like, you know, if I don't get a big bucks coming in, you only get like one chance a year, usually one or two.
Yeah.
And I don't got him on video. He's getting throttled anyways. Like, it's just for the memories. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. No, but that, man, that's so cool. I'm asking because it'd be really cool to see that, like, interaction of, you know, how those bucks, because you must be, like, up on top of a ridge then, and you're looking down into it, right?
Correct, yep.
Yeah, so your wind was blowing away from that valley, and these deer are coming through the valley. You can kind of get a glimpse at them, and then you're seeing this whole thing play out, which is just really cool, like, oh. You know, here's another one. Nope, he's running away too. Oh, buddy, you don't know what's coming to you. Like, you're just sitting there, like, talking to yourself about how these bucks are coming in. Like, yeah, you're going to run into that doe, and then you're going to leave.
Right.
Which is, yeah.
I do get it all on video.
Oh, you do?
But I probably won't share it until he's dead.
Sure.
I just don't want people to know that I'm hunting in that area.
Sure.
You know? Because, like, this big deer do weird things to people. And so I just don't want anyone knowing that I'm hunting that buck until he's dead or somebody else gets him.
Yeah. No, that's very fair, especially if you're hunting pieces, public or private, and other people can hunt them and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely, I don't share trail camera pictures of deer that I have on public land, you know,
yeah.
Beforehand, like, oh, found this guy in the public. People will be like, oh, what public are you hunting? Like,
right.
Not telling you. Right. Yeah, I did have a guy reach out to me and ask me that. I posted like some trail camera picture the other day on my story, and they're like, oh, really? Is that on that piece of public that's by your house? Or he said something like, I knew he knew like generally where that would be. And I was like, I'm not even answering you. No, it's not. I was just like, no, it's not. It's on a totally different piece. Private land. Can't hunt it.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. So then, and then with how you're looking at that, are you, when you go in there tomorrow morning, are you going to be able to see those bucks coming through the valley at all? Like trying to scent check that?
Yep. I will. And another reason why I'm going in a gray light, is because it's like, it's a fairly steep valley, right? So if I'm in there half hour before dark or before daylight, my thermal is just going to be dropping, like just dropping right down into there. But if I get set up like right at first light, like that's when I'm getting set up. And then I just get that thermal lift. Like, you know, thermal lift usually happens like 15, 20 minutes after first light, typically, maybe a little bit longer. And yeah. It's bulletproof.
Then absolutely bulletproof. Yeah. Yeah. When you can get that thermal and the wind to align in the same direction, that's always really nice.
It's a beautiful thing, man, especially in the morning. In the morning,
it is.
You can get away with murder.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because I, you know, one of the things that I remember talking to a guy about, Dylan Lenz, he was, one of his things was, man, if you are hunting this in the morning and you're getting like a thermal lift, you can have like a bad wind, and it's going to, yep. If you're on a ridge, it'll float right over the top of them. Like if you're 18 feet up in your tree and they're, you know, down a ridge below you. And so to them, you're 23 or 25 or even 30 feet up, and you got a thermal lift, even though your wind's going at them, it'll just float right over the top.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes back to just like using milkweed. I know some people think it's overhyped and stuff, but it's really not. Like, it's just simple science. I mean, you can't deny it. And the more you do it, the better you get an image in your head of like how the wind is fluctuating throughout a certain terrain feature.
Yeah. And then that allows you to, especially if you're being mobile like you are, you can be like, all right, I could sit, like, this is the area where I want to be, and I can get into any one of these like three or four trees right here and be happy with it. And then you throw some milkweed and you're like, that helps you narrow it down, like, oh sure, I'm gonna go over to this one because that's where it's gonna be, right?
Yep.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So what about like, it sounds to me like you're doing a lot of hunting, like at least with this deer, or you're hunting specific areas for deer, and you're not just you're hunting areas. How do I say this? You're not like pass through hunting, like in duck hunting, you know, like you can pass shoot, you can like pass shoot as they fly through, which is like what I would equate like a lot of rut hunters do, is like, all right, let's just like find a funnel, a pinch point, and sit on it. Right. And then just wait for these deer to pass through and shoot the first nice one I see. Whereas you're more of setting up a spot and looking at a specific area and being like, all right, I'm going to hunt this, not because it's a funnel, but because of X, Y, and Z. Does that sound accurate, or am I way off?
Oh, it's totally, totally accurate. And I will say that, like, I will do the whole waiting out, like getting into a pinch, like, you know, whether it's like a fence rail gap or some type of like a saddle or a pinch, I will wait out a certain spot if I have confirmation that there's a good buck there relatively recently, or I have other years' history of him using that particular terrain feature. But if I hunt that like spot two or three times in a row, like to say it's the same conditions, I just feel like your chances go down and down because it's just pressuring the spot, like getting in and out and leaving all your ground scent. And unless it's absolutely bulletproof, which I know some people do have those spots, I would just rather keep on finding that fresh sit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, I'm in the same boat. Like if I'm sitting a spot, I generally just get ADD and I want new scenery. Like, I'm like, I've seen this squirrel, you know, 17 times. I still haven't shot him and I'm not going to shoot him tomorrow.
Right.
But yeah, I want that new scenery. But the other piece that I always like constantly think about is that it might be your third sit in here, but it's his first coming through. Like and sometimes it just aligns that it's your first and his first, and that's a beautiful thing, right? But when it's your third sit at it and you're like, dude, I don't know, you know, oh, here's a perfect example is we have a spot on our property called, we call it the pit. It sounds a lot like where this buck corral that you have, kind of, it's a little thermal hub where this big drainage comes together and there's always a scrape there and there's a couple good trails there. And it's the only like good trail that goes east to west. There's a whole lot of reasons that you want to hunt the pit. And then one of the really, really nice things is any sort of north wind, you're hunting down in a valley, any sort of north wind, it's on the pit and the scrape is everything, and everything is on the other side of this little creek ditch. And the creek ditch is like 4 feet deep. It's just years of runoff. But you're only 30, it's 35 yards from the stand to the scrape. And you can have, it's basically the stand set up and your wind and everything is bulletproof if there's a north wind in there. Any sort of north wind, north, northwest, west. So that pit is super helpful. And we sat it the other weekend, probably three or four times, a couple different guys sat it because we had it, just the conditions worked out really well to sit it. Didn't see shit, not a deer. The day we don't sit it, boom, there he is at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, one of the nice 10 pointers we were after. Now, the real question that we have is like, okay, is he there because it was just his first time passing through there? Or is he there because we were not there? And he had been there the last few days and he just got wind of you. So that always makes us think about that. My personal opinion on the whole thing was that it was just his first, he was just making his rounds. He was on a different piece and he was just coming back through at that point. Cause we didn't have any pictures of him even at night in the area until this happened. And then we got a couple more pictures of him at night and then we haven't seen him since. But I feel like sometimes it's not always like in our mind, it's always, it needs to be our first fresh sit. And sometimes it just needs to be their first time coming back through an area.
Right. Right. Yeah. How long has that stand been there for?
2 years. We placed it last year. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I found it by I sat on the ground. I was walking through the area and I was going to a different spot. And then I had a buck come running through the pit and I was on a four-wheel trail. I had him come running through and I was like, oh, that's kind of nice. And then a doe came running through and then another buck came running through. So I was like, oh, I'm going to set up here. Like, this is clearly the spot to be right now. And then I kept wondering why they weren't busting me. Cause I was like, in this valley, usually you get squirrely winds and usually you can't like sit a valley, without getting busted when the winds are swirling. So I was throwing milkweed like every 10 minutes and it just always kept doing the same thing and just shooting down the valley and dropping into the creek. And it would never cross to the other side of the creek. So I was like, I mean, this is looking pretty nice. Like, so they're all running the north side of this creek and I'm sitting on the south side of it. And my wind is always dropping into it, regardless of if it's north or northwest or west. Like if we have any sort of wind, and the only big thing is it can't be like over 10 miles an hour. If it's over 10 miles an hour, then it starts really swirling. But if it's a nice, easy, consistent wind, like you're in the money the whole time.
Dude, that's such a, oh my God, that's such a good point. Like, I don't think a lot of people really understand how much like a prevailing wind direction in this particular speed can really affect how the wind moves through a certain terrain feature. Like, because the spot I hunted this morning, like, you know, this, I don't know if you went out this morning, but it was, you're tagged out. But
I'm tagged out.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's cool, dude. I mean, I can go kill some does, but yeah, I did not hunt this morning. I got
sleeping weather too. Out.
Yeah, I got my kids out the door, enjoyed beautiful sunrise morning with a cup of coffee and got to work. But anyway, continue on, sir.
Yeah. So like the spot that I hunted this morning, I hunted it because I knew it was going to be a light to variable wind with a lot of frost and a very heavy thermal pull. So I hunted that spot because there's really no good wind direction because the deer come from 360 degrees, like come from all directions. But I can get like 30 feet up in this tree. And if I'm 25 feet, my wind is just kind of still blowing out, like, you know, horizontally. But if I get 30 feet, it just happens to be how the valley sits or whatever. Literally, you drop milkweed and just goes down a little bit and then drills down a little bit, straight up in the air. So I was bellering on my grunt tube this morning. And I called in two different bucks right away. And then right before I got down, I called in a third. All come from different directions.
No way. That's pretty slick. How'd you figure that out? Did you just keep climbing?
So I've had permission to hunt here since I was a senior in high school. So since 2016 is when I graduated. So I've hunted it for a while. And then like 2020, hunting it one time, I was like at that 25 feet mark, not a lot of cover on the tree. It's a huge walnut tree, like, you know, like a medicine ball size and diameter. And I was just dropping milkweed, like just, you know, just throwing it to the side. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what happens if I like stand up and put it above my head. So I got to sit up and I took a milkweed size I could reach. And that's when I started noticing that effect. And then I got up there, like I could feel it. Like I could feel there's just something going on. Like the air was just lifting up right there. Difference of 5 feet. I mean, It's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's wild. I've never experienced that before, but I know people who have, where you just get this thermal uplift right in a valley, like air just does, like the wind and air just does what it does, and all of a sudden you're getting something consistent where previously you never had anything consistent.
It's such a good feeling. Every time we get those conditions, I'm gonna go to that spot because like it's in a good area. I don't like to call a lot, like unless I see a deer. I don't do a lot of blind calling. But that spot I will, because I'm confident the deer aren't gonna get downwind to me, you know?
Yeah. So then for you, I mean, in that, like for everybody, anybody listening, it's getting the milkweed, checking your areas, checking your spots, double checking them, checking it at different heights, like as you're climbing up and checking things out. And I mean, there's no reason not to throw, like if you, like if you're sitting in your stand and you drop some milkweed just at like chest height, maybe stand up, drop some more milkweed, see if like, if you're not getting something that you really like, maybe there's an option. And it, and especially if you're hunting hills and valleys, because it, that air can shoot up that valley, you know, up that sidewall. Whereas if you're on flat land, it might be a little bit different and you're just going to have to mess around with your own scenario and circumstance. That sound?
Sounds 100% accurate. Yep.
Okay. Gotcha. No, it works. So then tomorrow you're going for them in the morning. Do you have any sort of plan if like you don't find them? Like a plan B, like, all right, I sat here for 4 hours, nothing's here.
Yeah. So I'm hunting some urban ground this year for the first time. Right. My uncle's just got some property near an undisclosed town. My cousin actually shot a really nice mature 8-pointer there last night.
Nice.
And there's another 8-pointer that's there. It's probably 140-inch deer. Like, he's good size 8-pointer.
Yeah.
But he is freaking just an absolute brute, like just huge, huge body. You can hardly tell the difference between his neck and his chest, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I got a good chance of shooting him. Like if all else fails and I just lose track of this buck for a while, I think I could probably shoot him. So I don't have my mind made up yet. It's going to happen real time tomorrow.
Right. Hopefully by the time this airs, I'll be like, hey, I'll make a new intro for it. I'll be like, hey, everybody listen to this, because Brooks just killed this buck.
Yeah. I hope so, man. I hope so.
No. Yeah. Last year you said you killed that one, as he was crossing the road, heading back to the neighbors, right? Or something like that.
Yeah. Really glad you brought that up. So this buck that I shot last year, he's like a 160-inch 10-pointer. Really mature deer. We think he was like 6.5. But what's super interesting about this buck is that I had essentially 3 years history of this buck, and I always had daylight trail camera pictures or sightings of him between November 11th and November 14th with a northwest wind. Every single year he was using this particular ridge, and I know he was taking a doe back into some cover. It's across the road.
Yeah.
So last year was just the year that I figured it out. It was November 12th, northwest wind. Like, my cousin Drew actually saw this buck like a mile away the day before. And I was like, yeah, perfect, man. He's going to drop that doe and he's just going to go right back here and he's going to pick up another one, because that's the last 3 years. Why would he not do it again this year? And then, sure enough, came bumping a doe right before he's going to cross a very busy county road. Shot him about 35 yards off of a county road. He could see me from the road. And
oh, that's
he
awesome.
died right in front of another hunter's Jeep that hunts the property too. I don't have any idea who this guy is. He just has permission in there. Died right in front of his Jeep.
That's awesome. Be like, yeah, I didn't really go far right here.
Yeah, we were getting him out, and like I was had him all dressed and was walking back to the truck, and this guy was walking out. It's like, hey, been having any luck? No.
No clue, dude. Just out here wandering around. Don't mind my bloody hands.
Right.
Oh, that's great, man. And that is just like, I mean, he's just coming out of a picked cornfield, going across, got pulled the doe out of that picked cornfield. And she probably comes into heat every single year at the same time. So he's probably like, hey, I'm going to go get Betty Lou, you know, right now. It's her time. Gonna go get her and come back and going to go across the road there and get her into my buck corral or whatever, right?
Yeah. The breeding zone where the magic happens.
That's interesting that you bring it up that they that he's used it year over year over year. Why wouldn't he do it another year? And I think that's that holds true for a lot of boxes. Like in certain times of the year, they like to be in certain areas, and like these does are gonna come into heat in these areas. Like I'm very curious. I will be hunting the piece of public ground that I killed that buck on the other day. He bred a doe on October 26th. That doe is likely to come into heat early again next year, and she's probably going to be in that area again. So I'm probably going to hunt that again and see what it's like. Yeah, see what it's like. Because I know that from talking with a couple of deer farmers, they say the same does come into heat at the same times of the year every year within a couple days. Like they all, like it's usually about the same. So it's like, hey, if you're still here, like I'm definitely going to come over here and hunt this, and hopefully no one else is.
Phenomenal tip. That's a great tip.
Okay, cool. So that was, that was last year's buck. So you just hunting them on a specific pattern during the rut, which is unusual. but then what about the year before that?
So year before that, that was, the buck that was coming, it was October 24th. So, you know, a little bit different time of the year.
Yeah.
So I actually got another buck that I shot November 18th.
Yeah. Okay. That's the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would have been 2020, I think, is when I shot him.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Possibly. Maybe 21. No, yeah, I think it was 21.
It was 20.
It was 20.
Yep.
Okay. So this buck, he's a typical beautiful 10 pointer, like just great buck. And so we had like three pictures of this deer, Drew and I did. Drew and I were hunting the same property this time. And we had one picture in the middle of the night. That's all we had, like October 20th, middle of the night picture, knew he's in the area. Like picture just confirms a buck's in the area, right? Like that time of year.
Yeah.
Then we had two daylight pictures of him, like November 10th and November 14th, when it was just hellacious winds, like 30 mile an hour plus winds. He seemed to be like just going in this particular spot. I still don't know why. He was just using the spot with like really heavy winds. And so the 18th, it was like 25 mile an hour winds with 35 mile an hour gusts. So like it was my last day of vacation. So like this is the best thing I got to go off. Yeah, it's a rut specific pattern. And sure enough, he crossed the county road, came from the neighbors, and you know, came right in my lap, shot him at 11 or 12 yards away.
Oh man, that's awesome. And so because I always think about the rut as like there is no pattern, but I mean you're telling like from last year in 2020, there is a pattern. Like they like to be in certain areas at certain times with certain conditions, right? So yeah. I mean, if you're tracking deer year over year, or you're seeing, like you're out there, you know, on a northwest wind day at 15 miles an hour, and they're doing something today, and they might be out of range today. They might be at 90 yards, 100 yards, or whatever, and you have the same conditions tomorrow. It's possible that you can go back in there and they will be right there again.
Yeah, it's chaotic. This time of year is chaotic. It's organized chaos. Like nature is always organized, right?
Yeah.
But you can just draw up certain parallels for certain spots. Also certain deer. Like if you have multiple years history of a certain buck and you go back and you correlate it with weather, wind direction, time of year, I don't want to say it's 100% chance he's going to do the same thing, but it's north of 50% chance. And if you get north of a 50% chance odds doing this game, you're in the chips.
Yeah. Have you, so, you know, hunting bucks that are, I 100% agree. Like if my personal opinion, if I can get like 10% odds, I'm happy with that. Right. One out of 10 sets. If I'm looking at a buck of 150 inches or better, and one, you told me like, hey, if you sit this 10 times, you're probably going to kill him. I'd be like, all right, I'll sit it 10 times. That's fine. You know, like, right. So, you know, like a lot of us have, you know, less than most people are probably hunting like a number of sits, probably like 25 or less, I'd be willing to bet. Cause a week, 7 days straight of sits would be, if you mathed it out at two sits a day, that'd be 14 sits. So if you did a week straight plus some weekends and stuff like that, you're probably looking at 25 to 30 sits. And most people don't kill a mature deer. So you're looking at worse than one out of 30 for most of the time, probably closer to one out of 70 or one out of 100, some in that range. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's drawing up those types of odds. If you get a 50%, like if they're doing the same thing year over year and you can get those odds up to 10%, hell yeah. Like, and if you can get them up to 50% where it's like, dude, he's either going left or right. And if he goes left, I'm in the money, like sit that spot for sure. Do you have a spreadsheet or somewhere where you keep track of all this, or?
I do. Yeah. Okay. It's a multiple years. I track every buck from when he's two years old. So if I got 2 year olds right now, I mean, I'm not like correlating all the stuff right now. I do that after the season, but like I got my own folders for deer, you know, and don't really name them unless like they're really big. But my spreadsheet is pretty in depth. It's and I got it all. Cool. It's all populated now. Like it's all formatted and stuff like that, so I can filter through it relatively quickly. That's super important though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, if you're looking at, all right, I'm hunting a 30 mph wind, like, do I have any cameras of bucks that are 30 mph winds or better, you know, and you just like filter that out and boom, it kicks out two deer. It's like, yeah. And these two properties, I have this buck and this buck that I've been getting, you know, right. I mean, that's gotta be a phenomenal resource for you to keep track of all that rather than having to think about it. Have you noticed, and some of the, this is something that I've heard, actually, I'm not going to taint my question. Have you noticed that more mature deer will have a more consistent pattern or a less consistent pattern, like throughout their like rutting, or I guess the rut time frame?
I think 4 year olds and 5 year olds are the hardest deer to hunt. Especially the areas that I hunt, like there's a lot of pressure. Like there's every property. If there's a property that doesn't have somebody hunting on it, I'm asking for permission. Like I know someone doesn't hunt it or whatever. And it just seems like those 4 and 5 year old deer, for whatever reason, like they're just, I don't know if it's because like they're younger, they're more aware, they're maybe a little bit less confident. So like they're, I don't know. It's just my personal opinion. But like that 6 year old I shot last year, I mean, I had him within 20 yards 3 times and just took the 3rd time to actually get an arrow off because he wouldn't stop. Like he was coming in, I'm like yelling at him to stop and he wouldn't. So then the last time I shot him on the walk because he wouldn't stop, but he's not deaf, but just wouldn't stop for any reason.
Gotcha.
He was just like easier to the 6 year old deer, he was like, I have like, there's 3 areas that I know he's using frequently with certain like conditions. And I mean, I saw him like 10 times. I've never seen a buck I'm hunting as much as I saw him. And he was one of the more mature deer I've had the privilege to hunt.
And you got to see, and he was a visible deer. Was anybody else hunting him?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, one comment I want to make to that, so I shot 2 bucks last year too, because I had a CW tag last year. Okay. And man, I got a lot of shit for that. Shooting 2 bucks, 2 mature bucks last year.
Oh, really? Like,
yeah. There's so many people around here that are not, I don't want to specify around here. There's people in general, if they're having problems, they like to point fingers at other people instead of just like doing everything that they can in their own power to be better, you know? So, but I would, if I had a CW tag, I'd gladly shoot 2 in a year again, every time.
Yeah. Did you get a third CWD tag?
No, so that 6-year-old actually did not test positive. It's like one of the only mature deer that we test all of our bucks, and it's one of the only ones that tested negative. And he was by far one of the most mature.
Interesting.
Kind of goes against you took the
solution out of the herd, man. You need to let him breed more. No, that's
cool. I don't know what your stance is on CWD. I think it's having a toll on the age structure. Like,
oh man, like I will. So my stance on that is I have not. We have never. So I've hunted our property for 6 years, and we're in southwestern Wisconsin as well. I've never had a big hammer on camera, like 100. The buck I killed this year is the biggest buck we've ever had on camera. Actually, I shouldn't say. There was a buck that was the first year we got the property. So my buck this year, the no-neck scored like 158. I think that's what it was. And there was a buck that the neighbor shot that scored 163. But we have not ever had a hammer on. And there are bucks that come through that are 3.5 or 4.5 years old that are 10 points. That should be hammers the following year, and they just aren't. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they die. I don't know if, you know, they just don't get, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they die. I don't know if they don't get big, if the genetics aren't great, but I know like the neighbors shot, I've never got pictures of them, but they shot a 173. So I know that like they exist and they can. I mean, you're in southwestern Wisconsin, one of the best places, you know, in the country to hunt big whitetails. So there's got to be bucks of that caliber, but we've never gotten any on camera. So that would be my instance of like, why are we not getting 6-year-old hammers? Because I know I don't kill them. I know the neighbors don't either. So like they should be something, but we just don't get them.
So we have a, and I talked with a very prominent land manager in this area, like he's very secretive and he grows just don't even want to begin to say how big a deer he grows. So he told me this year when I was touring his property, he thinks if you get a deer to 4 years old, there's a really good chance that deer is going to survive, like to be 5 and 6 if he doesn't get killed. But he's seeing a lot of the 2 and 3 year old bucks die of CWD before they turn 4. And I totally agree with that. Like if we got a buck that makes it to 4, we really think he's going to make it to 5 if he doesn't get shot. And I've seen that so many times, like the 2 and 3 year old bucks, you get pictures of them, skin and bones, they're going to die soon. Like they got CWD, they're going to die. And you get a good 4-year-old and it looks really healthy. And you're like, then you get excited. You're like, yeah, this buck, I don't know if he's immune. Like, what's going on? Just seems to be the case. And I believe that's true.
Gotcha. Interesting. I would tend to lean towards your land manager friend who spends a lot of time out there and whatnot, more so than my own opinion. So that'd be really cool if that's the case. And I know we have one buck on the property and I call him the old man, 'cause I think he's like 8. 'Cause he's been the same rack for the last like 4 years. He's like 140 inch, 8 point. And he just doesn't change. It's just the same. And now it's probably less. He just gets thinner every year. The last couple of years, he's just gotten thinner and thinner. So it's just one of those things that I'm like, well, we want to kill the old man, but we don't want to kill the old man because he's probably immune or, you know, whatever, like let him pass those genetics on that are saving him from dying from CWD. So it's interesting. I mean, the buck I shot this year was 5.5 at least, if not 6.5. So, we haven't aged him or anything, but based on the taxidermist, just looking at him and seeing trail camera pictures of him in years prior, he's like, yeah, this probably looks like at least a 5.5, maybe 6.5 year old deer, which is what we're gunning for. Like, that's what we're aiming for. So yeah, I don't know. I'm so like leery. I hate that this is true, but you're so leery of like the DNR's numbers. Cause what is motivating them, especially like after you figure out, you know, especially after COVID, where basically everything was manipulated to make you think a certain way. Now you're like, all right, how else am I being manipulated? You know? So it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, I'd rather take, you know, a serious landowner's, somebody who's out there every day checking on their deer, building food plots, running 1900 trail cameras, like checking everything, like an old man who has no time or has a ton of time, nothing to do except grow a mega deer herd. Like, that'd be somebody that I'd be interested in talking to, you know, about like what they think of CWD, because they're going to keep tabs on all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, and one thing that we're starting to implement now too, like, I mean, I don't have like property I can manage because like I don't have a big enough parcel, but like I have friends that do, you know. And what we're doing is like we're essentially de-risking the property for having like disease pressure. It's like we're trying to shoot as many does as we can because these areas are overpopulated to begin with. So we're trying to get as many does out of there just to create less social pressure for the bigger deer, just less disease pressure in general. And it seems to work for some guys. Like, you notice the biggest bucks that are getting shot in this area every year are coming from one or two certain areas.
Gotcha. No, that's fair. That makes sense. All right, man. Well, no, good convo, dude. I appreciate the time. We're running up on like an hour and a half or so. Was there anything else, like any other big tips that you could give for if like hunting the rut, like getting after it or staying mobile or anything like that?
You just gotta stay positive. Like, you just gotta stay positive. Remember why you're doing it. You know, once January and February are here, you're gonna be wishing it was this time of year, you know? So like just stay positive. Just, if you don't shoot one, it's not the end of the world. Just at the end of the year, just look yourself in the mirror and make sure that you can tell yourself you did everything you could to accomplish your goals. And if you didn't, you know, you got to give some credit to the deer at the end of the day too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, dude, that's fair. Don't leave with regrets, man. Put it all out there. Cause that's the worst, is like, man, I should have tried harder. I should have hunted more days. I should have done this. I shouldn't have slept in. Like, that's the worst one, is when you sleep in and you piss. Oh, you get so pissed about
sleeping. Hungover.
Yeah. And you just like, why did I do that? It was a perfect, beautiful morning, blah, blah, blah. You know? Yeah, that's the worst. But no, I totally agree. Leave the deer woods with no regrets. So, all right. Well, thank you for hopping on, Brooks. Really appreciate the time, man. If people want to find you and reach out and ask you a few questions or anything like that, what's the best place?
Just my Instagram. Fairly active on there. It's just at, I think it's just at Brooks Chandler. Honestly, I don't even know what my Instagram handle is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes, but yeah, it's Brooks Chandler
for sure. Awesome. That's what it is. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Really appreciate the time. If you guys enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, tell a friend, write a review if you feel so inclined. I would really appreciate that. And I wish you all the best in your rut hunting activities and the rest of season. Good luck out there, and hopefully you find that big one. Catch y'all next time.